This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL preseason is officially in the books, and how about college football? The dogs were barking in week zero. What a weekend, and it's only going to get better as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We've got a jam-packed show on tap wherever you're watching, VSiN.com, YouTube TV, iHeartRadio. We are so happy to have you with us here today. Michael, this weekend was the first step in what will be nothing but meaningful football on our television screens from now through February. How are we feeling?
Oh, we feel so good about that, Stormy. Just think, 2 weeks from today, you will be a nervous wreck. You will be pacing the halls. Poor Chris will have to deal with you because your Niners are getting ready to play that championship team, the New York Football Jets. I can't wait.
I can't wait either. It's the stress and the anxiety and the anger and screaming at the television that we need, right? It's not helping me emotionally, though, that the Jets continue to take money in that spot, neither here nor there. Also coming up on the show today, Thomas Gable in about 30 minutes, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City. We'll go behind the counter with the way week zero played out. We'll talk through week one in both college football and the NFL. And then in hour two, deep dive in college football, best bets from the Action Network analyst, Michael Calabrese. To wrap up real quickly, Michael, the NFL preseason from a betting standpoint, unders for the entirety of the preseason won out. They cashed around 65% despite overs going 11-5 this past weekend. We talked about how the books would probably correct course a little bit after the amazing under run for the first 2 weeks. That did happen. Favorites week three go 10-5-1 straight up, but the dogs were still covering 10-6 ATS. Dogs overall were a winning proposition as well, 29-17-1 against the spread in this preseason, which we saw last night as well, where the New England Patriots close a 7-point favorite against the Washington Commanders. They lose 20-10, but all anybody is talking about what's going on with the quarterback position in New England.
Yeah, Drake May came in. You know, I mean, here's the problem. I don't mean to be, you know, like Debbie Downer here or negative, but Drake May was playing against third team. He's playing against most guys that are going to be on the waiver wire today and tomorrow. And he looked great. He looked poised, and he looks like he's got a great future. There's no question. He was decisive. He had great accuracy with the football. He was in rhythm. But that offensive line looks nothing like to be trusted. It just that was their starting line, Stormy, playing against backups. And they were having a hard time. Jacoby Brissett, you know, almost dislocated his shoulder because the guard and the back ran into each other and they missed the end coming off the edge on the action. So, like, everybody wants Drake May to start, but I don't want to get the kid killed. I don't want him to get killed. I want him to have a career. I don't want him to start off like David Carr, where he's looking at the pass rush every 2 minutes. I think this is a harder decision than who's the best player.
That play was a mess, and you're dead on. They have tried to experiment throughout the preseason with that offensive front, and it's not looking any better than it did last year, where it was a mess as well. Jacoby Brissett, as you mentioned, injures his shoulder in the first quarter. He doesn't return. Gerard Mayo did say after the game, though, that had this been a regular game, he would have been able to come back, but no point in doing that there. When it comes to the quarterback competition as a whole, though, I go back to comments that we had last week about Gerard Mayo here, Michael, that he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth, where one minute he's talking about we need to preach patience and a development plan for Drake May. And then on the other side, he says, oh, yeah, it's a quarterback competition and he could play. Speaking of which, he did the same thing in the last 24 hours where he's on the podium post game yesterday. He's very noncommittal when asked if Jacoby Brissett couldn't go in week one, would you start Drake May? He says he's our clear number two quarterback. And then today on WEEI's Greg Hill show, here's what he had to say.
I'm not going to get too far down the road on if Jacoby could play or couldn't play. What I will say is that this is a true competition. It wasn't fluff or anything like that. It's a true competition. And I would say at this current point, you know, Drake has outplayed Jacoby. Now, in saying that, we have to take in the full body of work, you know, going all the way back to the spring and the beginning of the training camp, and we'll see where we end up. But those are the conversations that will happen here over the next couple of days.
Now, Michael, I don't think there's any disagreement in terms of the numbers and what we've seen that, yes, Drake May has had more success this preseason than Jacoby Brissett. But you brought Jacoby Brissett here to be your bridge quarterback for a reason, so you didn't have to force the young guy in, right?
Yeah, and this offensive line, you want to put him behind there?
Yeah, protect your asset.
Ask Mayo if that was his son, would he put him behind that line? I wouldn't put my sons behind. I wouldn't put Dominic, my grandson, behind that line. No way. Mm. I mean, come on. So here's the real issue. And I thought it was really revealing after Chris Collinsworth was absolutely going berserk on the over route, which is a high school pass that Drake May completed that he thought was completely uniquely designed, was the fact that Mayo says that Alex Van Pelt's the head coach of the offense. When did that happen? Like, I didn't know we had a bunch of head. I didn't know Mayo wasn't. I didn't know he was like a quasi coach. Like, what does Mayo do if he's not doing offense, if for defense or the kicking game? Like, Alex Van Pelt got fired in Cleveland. You've just turned over a $9 billion organization to Alex Van Pelt. I mean, are we kidding ourselves here? I mean, it makes nobody said a word about that. Like, how did Alex Van Pelt own the right to be able to develop Drake May? Who has he ever developed in his life? I mean, when Peyton Manning went to Indianapolis, he had Tom Moore sitting there. Tom Moore's been around the block, Super Bowl champions with the Steelers in the 70s. I get that. But Alex Van Pelt, all of a sudden, he's a quarterback whisperer, and he's going to tell us about the player development? This is why it's all wrong. I get it. Belichick was selling pizza in South Boston or making pizza, and he had nothing to do with the team for 24 years. I get that. I understand he was irrelevant. But what the hell is going on there? So, what is happening, Stormy?
So irrelevant, so irrelevant. But you're right, because for an organization and a franchise that has been the model of consistency and success for years and years and years, it is very chaotic right now. And the odds show as much in terms of the expectations for this Patriots team. Their season win total is set at 4.5. They are the longest long shot in any division in the NFL this year. Plus 320 to have the worst record in the NFL. Same odds to be the lowest scoring team. And the team you already know, most people in Survivor will be fading week one. The Patriots, yeah, a 9-point dog in Cincinnati. Total 42.
That's going to go to 10, Stormy. That's going to 10. There's no question. Look, last year you and I both liked Carolina. We were wrong, but we saw in the summer that Carolina was going to be a disaster, and we were correct. I'm telling you, New England's going to be a disaster. I see it in the summer. They can't even move the ball against the backups for the Washington Commanders, who's not even a good team. Like, this is, you're not facing the backups of the Chiefs or the backups of the 49ers. That's the Commanders' backups who are going to get cut and not get claimed. And you can't move the ball against them. You can't pass protect against them. Matt Eumanns did the pod today for us. Thankfully, Matt, we appreciate you. And he's got the Patriots to have the first pick overall in the draft. Mm. I think that's a really good play. Yeah. Look, I admit I am very good friends with Bill Belichick. I think they did a man dirty. I admit all that. But this evaluation has nothing to do with my friendship. It has everything to do with what I'm seeing. It has everything to do with Mayo talking out of both sides of his mouth. It has nothing to do with, look, there's nobody going to be better than Belichick as a coach. Not even Jonathan Kraft could match his excellence, right? However, that being said, I mean, like, somebody's got to say it. Like, this is a disaster, and they're going to just keep going down there. They signed Michael Owanu to be the right tackle. But you know what happened, Stormy? He gained 70 pounds after they signed him, so now they got to play him at guard. Mm. Nobody talks about that.
Adding insult to injury, Michael, doesn't help the cause that they're also playing one of the toughest, if not the toughest, schedules in the National Football League this year. You got to bet $1,800 to win 100 back in order for them to just miss the playoffs. So, if that gives you a little context for what this is looking like for this team. I mentioned that week one game against the Bengals. Episode 2 of Survivor, the ride to 9.2 million, airs tonight, by the way, on VSiN, YouTube TV, on streaming live on X as well. Make sure you check that out, part 2 of what is a five-part series, ultimately getting geared up for contest season. While we're on the Bengals as well, Michael, Ja'Marr Chase, who has been holding in this training camp as he negotiates a contract extension, has been back on the practice field. He was a full participant over the weekend for the first time, and according to The Athletic, will continue to be a full participant this week. What does that mean where you sit in terms of his contract right now, and how positive is this for Cincinnati?
Well, look, Mike Brown, the owner of the Bengals, made it very clear that Chase is a difference maker, that Chase is going to be the guy that they know they have to pay. They're not letting Chase go. They're going to pay above market value. He's going to get maybe 36, I don't know. And he's going to get a ton of guaranteed money. He's that important to their franchise. So they've tried to work through a deal. They haven't come up with a deal yet. I'm sure they will at some point because Mike Brown's receptive to a deal. And I think that receptiveness that he's expressed has allowed Chase to come back in and play and participate as they prepare for the Patriots in the upcoming game. So that's really an important. Now, what we have to understand is now with Burton, this kid, Jermaine Burton, who they drafted from Alabama, who can run on the outside, who's a vertical outside receiver, he'll take the place of Chase. And they'll move Chase inside to replace Tyler Boyd, which then becomes a whole different set of conditions for the defense to double him, for the defense to try to take him away. You can't roll the coverage to a slot receiver. You can to the X, but you can't to the F. And so you have to be really – have to moving him around is going to create a lot more – a lot of explosive plays or opportunities, should I say, to get the ball down the field. And Burrow's very good. And I think that what we're seeing from Cincinnati is a shift from being all 11 to multiple personnel groups.
Yeah, Jermaine Burton, an underrated addition to this Bengals offense and what they might be able to do. Jamar Chase, he's third on the odds board for most receiving yards and most receiving touchdowns at 9-1 and 10-1 respectively, behind only Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb. Lamb, by the way, apparently has unfollowed the Cowboys. Jerry's not answering questions about players who aren't here, so that's a whole other conversation. We got to take a break, though. College football underdogs went 4-0 in week zero. Will the dogs continue to bark? We will discuss that and take a look at the week one college football slate coming up. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Needless to say, the Week Zero college football appetizer has me on the edge of my seat for the main course in Week One. Let's go, Michael. We had...
You liked Georgia Tech. I know you did. You were taking the points. I knew that one.
And yes, and you weren't even here on Friday. We did a segment, Mike Somich and I, Michael, called Call Me Crazy, But, and I was talking about the New Mexico line getting out of hand. I think I might want to bet Delaware State. There were four double-digit underdogs, all of them covered. Georgia Tech wins outright over Florida State, who was the favorite in the ACC. Now they're the fourth shot. Their hopes for a college football playoff, they're just thanking their lucky stars it's not a 14 playoff this year and that they can still be alive. But crazy chaos. You love to see it. Two more of the double-digit dogs in New Mexico and Nevada could have won. So maybe the Mountain West at the bottom isn't as bad as we all thought. I am so geeked out for college football right now, Michael. Week zero was awesome. How'd you take everything in?
Well, I think it's a great lesson to learn, though. I think what we learned from week zero is because of the transfer portal, because we don't have preseason games, because we're going off of names, not truly how players play, the lines are not really reflective with accuracy.
Sure.
And I think the book put some bad lines up. And I think you were smart to jump on the numbers because even though Delaware State had to go by way of Iceland to get to Hawaii, you know, they still matched up. I mean, they played decent. And so the same thing with Georgia Tech all the time. The line wouldn't open at 13.5 and went closed, I think, at 10. There was a lot of sharp money coming in on Georgia Tech consistently. And look, we know Montana State is a very good 1A program or whatever we
FCS.
Call that.
Yeah.
But Bronco Mendenhall is a good coach at New Mexico. He's always been a good coach, whether it's been at Virginia or BYU. And he'll get that program going. I'm not saying they're going to be an elite, but they showed really good character. I thought it was great. I think to me, what it proved to me, and this is an advertisement for our betting guide, our college betting guide, our pro, if you don't really study college, if you just think you're going to waltz in and go by what they say on game day, because everybody on game day had Florida State as the winner. Nobody even thought it was possible, right? Nobody did.
Except for their guest picker, Seamus. He steps up there and takes Georgia Tech. He was the only one.
only one. So, and I love game day. I love watching it. But if you're going to bet with them, you're going to be in the poorhouse.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that is a great tease to our college football betting guide, which is out now. We got in-depth previews of all 134 teams out there. Power ratings also right now at VSiN.com. Our own Adam Burke has an article on how to create your own power ratings for the season, how to develop your own model. Jonathan Von Tobel has an article out. Tyler Shoemaker, the T-Shoe Index, all getting you set for week one. So make sure you check out all of the amazing college football resources that we have at VSiN.com right now. And if you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, $175 from now through the Super Bowl, you get access to everything, including the picks and our guides for college football and the NFL. But real quickly, just to go back to some of these, Michael, like Hawaii has only been a favorite of 3 touchdowns or more 5 times since 2015. They haven't covered in a single one of them. So Delaware State does it again. New Mexico, they were the biggest FBS underdog to an FCS team ever. And it just felt like a lot of these were getting out of hand. And it was cool to see. The thing, though, for the Florida State-Georgia Tech game that I felt was so glaring, and I'm curious your opinion on this because you love talking about the guys up front. Everybody was talking going into this game about Florida State's defensive line and how they could be a contender for the best D-line in the entire country. Georgia Tech ran all over them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of this too is, you know, we don't really know who's good until we can see it, right? It's all paper tigers. Mm. It's like the Pro Football Focus is the Jets is a top 5 offensive line. I don't know where they come up with that, but that's what they came up with because they added Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith. I mean, like those guys are ancient and can't stay healthy. So it's a paper tiger. It's not a real tiger. I think it's a little bit about college football, too. You know, well, Florida State's going to be – Florida State lost a ton of guys. Mm. And there's no guarantee that the guys they brought in are going to be as good. I thought Saban was so good on College Dame Day when he was talking about Ole Miss. He said, look, Ole Miss has always had very good skill players. But the reason they lose to Georgia, the reason they lose to Alabama is they don't match up front. Mm-hmm. You know, and Georgia Tech matched up front to Florida State, and that's why they were able to pull the upset.
Yep. Brent Key, by the way, 13-3 against the spread as an underdog since taking over the interim head coaching role 2 years ago. 10-6 money line in the dog role. Now, just like that, Florida State, as I mentioned, goes from a favorite in the ACC to 6-1. They're 4th on the board, -425 to miss the CFP, +320 to make. Updated national championship odds 60-1. And as we transition from week 0 now to week 1, will the dogs continue to bark? Well, the Georgia Bulldogs, who are the number one ranked team in the country, certainly hopes not as they face Clemson in the opener. Georgia's a 13.5-point favorite, total 49 this coming Saturday. It's a noon Eastern kickoff from Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. You know, this is a Clemson team, 9-4 last year, didn't live up to expectations. They don't do the transfer portal, as we know. Cade Klubnik back as QB1. This is a team not a lot of people had confidence in. Facing up against a team, Michael, that everyone has power rated as the top-ranked team in the country, extremely talented, extremely well-coached. Is 2 touchdowns a fair number in your mind?
Well, I think if I'm a Clemson fan and, you know, one of the main recruiting, you know, Clemson built their program on beating Georgia on kids, Deshaun Watson being one of them, right? Mm. And so to be this lopsided in terms of the point total is really disappointing if you have to be. I mean, where are we? I mean, you're talking about 13.5 points. Could it go? And I don't think most of the money's still coming in on Georgia. Nobody thinks Clemson has a chance. And I kind of think so, too. I don't think Clemson's the same program that they once were. And I don't trust Klubnik to be as good as Carson Beck's going to be. Plus, yeah. Stormy, when you go through the top players in the South, Georgia's offensive line are all pro prospects.
Yeah.
The entire offensive line is filled with pro prospects. 3 of the 4 defensive linemen are pro prospects. Like, how do you match up to that?
Yeah. Well, and the defense took a, I guess, step back for them last year, right? And they're expected to be even better this year as well. You talk about their offense. Carson Beck's a Heisman Trophy favorite right now. The last time these two played, week 1, 2021, when we were expecting a high-flying, back-and-forth game, 10-3 final with Georgia winning that one. So a little bit of a different situation here with a total 49.5. We'll stick in the ACC here real quickly, Michael, because with all of this chaos that already happened in week 0 with Florida State, Miami has to beat Florida now, 2.5-point favorite against the Florida Gators in that Florida rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big – and Florida needs it because looking at their schedule, it's so damn tough. I mean, Billy Napier's got to come through. If he doesn't win this one, it's going to be a long haul to keep his job. And it could be an interim. It could be a midterm firing. I mean, there's impatience. I mean, Florida's program has sunk to levels where guys are transferring from Florida to Kentucky. Who ever thought of that?
Yeah.
Right? No disrespect to Kentucky's program, but nobody leaves Florida for Kentucky in football. They might in basketball, but not in football. So this is as much as a big game for Cristobal. It's a huge game for Billy Napier. And I think to me, you know, they've got to figure out a way to win this game. Yeah. And, you know, when you get in a situation where it's a close game, the Mario factor certainly comes into play.
No question about it, Michael. And like, that's the thing with Miami is everyone has been glowing about how unbelievably talented this roster is on paper. But can they get coached to wins when you need it? Because we've seen Mario Cristobal slip up in big moments far too many times. But you're dead on. This is a critical game for both teams. Billy Napier certainly coaching for his job this year. And this is a game that is always going to be ever so important, considering Florida plays the toughest schedule in the country this year. Two more games, very interesting. Notre Dame against number 20, Texas A&M, a top 10 team, a top 20 team. A&M a three-point favorite in this spot, Michael. This game opened pick'em and has steadily moved in A&M's direction. Then we've also got number 23, USC, and number 13, LSU, facing off here in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. LSU a 4.5-point favorite there. Either of those games interest you this weekend?
I'm excited to see Riley Leonard play for Notre Dame, but I'm also excited for Mike Elko's to shore up Texas A&M's defense. I mean, the splits on this game are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
As much as Notre Dame is like Chicago Bears fans in football where they bet, this 92% of the money's all over Texas A&M. That's why the line's moving that way. You know, we had Jack Johnson on yesterday, and he was talking about it, what a hard opener it is for LSU and for LSU to play USC, but I think this is a game where both teams were horrendous last year on defense. Which defense will be the better defense? I think that's going to be the key question here. People seem to be betting LSU in this game a lot.
Well, you look how high that total is for a reason, Michael. Both of those defenses were abysmal a season ago. But to your point real quickly about Notre Dame and Texas A&M, very exciting to see Riley Leonard as a Notre Dame quarterback, but who knows him better than anybody? Mike Elko, who coached him at Duke.
Yeah.
So that'll be a very interesting little tug of war. They know each other and their thoughts very, very well. Speaking of the over, as we were in LSU-USC, apparently the Michigan State quarterback is telling everybody to take the over in that game. He repeatedly told reporters this past week, if you bet, take the over in Thursday afternoon's presser. The market did follow that for a time, went from 46.5 to 47.5, but apparently we've had some buyback and people aren't buying on that over anymore. 45.5, the current total in Florida Atlantic, Michigan State. The Spartans laying 12.5 there. We will have more college football talk a little bit later on in the program, as well as coming up next when sportsbook director Thomas Gable joins the show. How many moneyline parlays did Georgia Tech crush this weekend? We'll get into it all. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know it's football season when people are all over social media complaining about their money line parlays getting crushed. Leg one. God only knows how many Georgia Tech caused despair for this weekend. But let's get into week zero reaction, looking ahead to week one, as well as the NFL getting underway here in short order with sportsbook director Thomas Gable, handling all the business out there at the Borgata in the Atlantic City. He joins us now on the Progressive guest line. What a weekend, TG. How we doing?
Great weekend, Stormy. And I guess it could be worse. People complain about their moneyline parlays being destroyed. I mean, at least they're not calling for refunds yet on something when somebody gets injured early. So,
yet,
you know,
it'll get worse
from here. Don't worry. It can only go downhill. But no, it was, it was very nice to have the Florida State Georgia Tech game early on Saturday. It gave everybody an opportunity who has missed this sport to get out there, watch a standalone game, bet on a standalone game. The handle was fantastic on it. You saw the line movement there going towards Georgia Tech, and really day of, we saw some Florida State money on Saturday morning. come in, lay the 10.5. But overall, it was a great result because of the fact Georgia Tech won that game outright. We also had a pretty nice decision on the total in that one as well. The fact that it stayed under was very good for us. But yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech winning that game outright kind of sealed the deal for a lot of people, unfortunately, if they were parlaying it. And, you know, in play was extremely good for us as well in that game. So it was a nice way to start off the season. I wasn't expecting much out of the other games with the way that the spreads were. And, you know, here, lo and behold, all the dogs come in. And, you know, the SMU game in Nevada, that could have actually been probably as good if Nevada had held on there and won that game outright. That would have been maybe even a bigger result for us than the Florida State-Georgia Tech game. So we did lose a little bit in play on that. Once SMU was down and continued to be down in that game until late, that's really when you started seeing people, you know, take shots when you could get 3-1 or, you know, plus 350, 4-1 on SMU in play to win outright. So lost a little bit in play there with SMU coming back, but overall, I can't complain about the way that the way week zero started for us.
TG, the Georgia Tech game, I think it opened, I don't know if you opened it under just under 2 touchdowns, and what did you close it at?
Yeah, to close 10.5, Michael. Yeah, and right, open 13.5, and that was the thing. You saw respected money come in on Georgia Tech early. We were taking respected Georgia Tech money, you know, Thursday, Friday before the game day. So it wasn't like they weren't getting bet. They certainly were taking money, and then a lot of the public seemed to be on Florida State. The morning of, I think I was a little surprised. I thought the number would creep a little bit higher on Saturday, past 10.5, it go a little bit higher, but didn't. So, yeah, I mean, on the spread itself, it was very good two-way action. But again, that game was open for quite some time leading up to that week.
We were talking earlier on the program about how, like, we as bettors, who really knows week one? You think that you have a feel for a roster, but you're not sure until you actually see a team out there on the field. And with all of these double-digit underdogs not only covering, but in many cases probably should have had the upset win outright, like, we're, as you, from an odds maker standpoint, where do you feel going into week one of the college football season, and do you learn anything from what you saw in week zero?
Well, yeah, it's going to be constantly making adjustments, and that's what you saw after week zero. You know, you've upgraded Georgia Tech and Nevada a bit, and then you're going to downgrade Florida State and SMU and probably Hawaii a little bit as well, based on their performances. And you know, this is what college sports is, whether we're talking football or even basketball. Coming into the season, you know, we're making our best guess, our best judgments on the power ratings for these teams. But the fact that the transfer portal's out there, and a lot of times you're getting almost an entire new team year to year. The power ratings are just that. It's your best guess, and you're going to be making adjustments, and you're going to be making adjustments quickly. So going into week one, are there going to be some lines that probably aren't great? You know, when you look at the end results of games, yeah, more than likely. And certainly, you know, you take into account the bets that are coming in from people that you respect, and they're going to be the ones shaping the lines and how the market's moving. So it is tough. It's certainly tough in college sports when you don't have a preseason, and you don't really see a whole lot until day of that opening week zero or week one game. Now, I will say for the teams that played week zero, I think it is an advantage going into week one that they already have a game under their belt. Overall, yeah, you're going to see numbers that are going to be, you know, at the end of the day, after week one, you're going to say, wow, that number was really off. We didn't do a great job with that. And it's going to happen. That's going to happen.
Hey, TG, now let's shift to the NFL. I mean, the preseason's over. What has there been a team based on the sharp money that has been influenced by the preseason in terms of betting? I mean, the strangest thing, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, heavy bet game, Indianapolis, Houston, most heavy bet games. Is that the way it is in your shop at the Borgata?
No, I'll tell you, as far as based on what we've seen in the preseason, I'm not surprised that the Steelers are one of those teams that have gotten affected, that their week one line has gotten affected by what we've seen in the preseason because, you know, let's face it, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, I mean, that was the storyline. What are these guys going to look like? How long are we going to stick with Wilson as starting quarterback there in Pittsburgh? So I'm not surprised that preseason may have affected that number. But in terms of what we've seen otherwise through the preseason, it hasn't done anything drastic to these lines for week one. A lot of starters, as you know, didn't see any action in the preseason. Now, the one line move that we have seen here has been Dallas and Cleveland for week one. The Browns are now up to 2.5-point favorites in that. That game was around pick or Cleveland lane one and a half. So that has moved. And we have seen early Browns money in that game. That's actually one of the more heavily bet week one games for us on our slate. Obviously the Eagles as well. We take a ton of Eagles money, as you know, but even market wide, the Eagles have been getting bet. They're now up to 2.5-point favorites, pretty much market-wide for that Friday game opening week. So those two games are probably the most heavily bet ones here on our slate. Jacksonville and Miami, 1 p.m. game there. That's also been pretty heavily bet game for us. Miami's been taking some money in that one. But Michael, to go back to your point, I don't know how much in the preseason you're really going to see affect the week one line, so to speak, unless, again, there's some sort of major injury, which, thank goodness, we haven't seen this year.
TG, we've only got about a minute left here with you, but to go to college football week one as well, some potential top 25 on top 25 crime. It's going to come up this weekend. what games are being bet the most in most significant line movements?
Well, we've seen pretty significant line movement in the Penn State-West Virginia game. And, you know, that opened 10. Penn State got as high as 11.5, now down to 8.5. And, again, a lot of these week one games have been on the board for months. So you have to remember that, you know, there's been line movement just from through July and even June. Yeah, I mean, Penn State going to West Virginia, going to be a tough game, I think, for the Nittany Lions to start out. A lot of people are saying Penn State has a chance there to get into the playoffs. Should be a contender there, but West Virginia is not an easy place to play, and I think they're going to be that place is going to be difficult to go to in week one for them. This Miami, Florida, and Florida game. Again, pretty heavily bet game already. So you've seen the line move there, 3.5 down to 2.5 in that one.
Great stuff as always, my friend. Thank you, Thomas.
All right, thank you guys.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, get back to some reactions from the NFL preseason. Our producer Elliot has some preseason all-stars. Will it translate, though, to the regular season? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL preseason is in the books, and the countdown to week one is down to 10. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Last segment, we were talking to director of the race and sportsbook at the Borgata, Thomas Gable. He was laying out some of the games that have been taking the most significant action and said that the Dallas Cowboys line move against the Cleveland Browns in week one has been significant. We've seen a flip of favorites here. Cleveland now laying 2.5 at home, total 43, Michael, which brings us to some news of the day here in Cleveland. Browns running back Nick Chubb expected to start the 2024 season on PUP, physically unable to perform list, meaning he will be unavailable for at least the first four games of the season. Chubb working to get back, of course, from significant knee surgery, had to have two of them. But also, Michael, we pair that in with the fact that Deshaun Watson was expected to play in this final preseason game against Seattle, had some shoulder soreness earlier in the week, did get back on the practice field, but didn't end up playing in the preseason game. He hasn't played at all this preseason. Should we be a little bit concerned about Cleveland out the gates here?
Yeah, I'm really concerned about Cleveland. Now, they activated Jake Conklin, their starting left tackle off of PUP. He was hurt last year, missed most of the season. And then they also activated Willis, their starting left tackle, very good player. Now, they activated him, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to play in the game against the Cowboys, because what they're saying to you is they're not going to be a 4 to 6 week miss time. They're only going to be maybe a week or two, or maybe they could come back. So that's the bright side of that, because this Cleveland offensive line, when it's healthy with Willis and Conklin to go along with Teller and Betano and Posick, they're really good. They're a good offensive line. Now, without Chubb, they're not as good as they typically are. Ford ran the ball really well. Nyami Hines, who they signed last offseason, is still on NFI. He's not ready to play. He won't be ready to play. They signed Dante Foreman, who got hurt earlier in camp. Remember, they had to airlift him out of the practice facility there in West Virginia at the Greenbrier, but they say he's back to being healthy. Look, this Cleveland team, it comes down to, where are we with Watson? Can he throw the football? You know, they've added Judy to the team. They think that makes them a more dynamic offense. You know, Ford will be a good player, but if you're going to throw the ball lies with the quarterback, and he's got to throw it. I'm not sold on that. I understand why the line's moving away from the Cowboys because of all the negative publicity, but there's a lot of stuff going on with Cleveland that just isn't publicized.
Yeah. Jerome Ford, who you mentioned there, led the Browns 813 rush yards last year. He will be RB1 out the gates here. And Kevin Stefanski has insisted Deshaun Watson will be, quote, ready to roll for week one, and he's very confident in his offseason work, despite not making an appearance in the preseason or, you know, doing as much of a workload as we expected just last week. And I want to shout out the Follow the Money crew for this one, Michael. They said something on their show earlier today that really stuck out to me, and I'm curious your thoughts on. Since 2018, take out the 2020 COVID year because they didn't play preseason, teams with starting quarterbacks who did not appear in the preseason are just 17-16 straight up in those week one games. As you see on your screen here, Josh Dubow of the AP says there are 10 quarterbacks who did not play a snap in the preseason. Watson, who we just discussed, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts, Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Kyler Murray, Matthew Stafford. As you look at this list of names here, again, we'll go back to that concern question. Any concern for these QBs who did not play in the preseason?
Well, I think there's really two lists within this list, right? There's the guys that were hurt that missed most of the season, Cousins, Watson, you know, that had to go. Remember last year, we had 66 new starting quarterbacks, the most ever in the National Football League. And then they're coming back from injury and they're still not participating, when we know that week one will be a challenge for them as they get into their groove. So, yeah, I think, look, Brock Purdy played. I mean, here's the thing I'll say. If Andy Reid's playing Patrick Mahomes, that should tell you something right there, right? If Andy Reid puts the best player in the league on the field in a preseason game, now, he don't play him a lot, but he plays him and gets him wet. Tom Brady, the goat of goats, he wanted to play. He always played in the preseason. Brady never missed a preseason. He might not have played the first game, but he was going to play games two and three for sure and practice against teams. So I think, to me, it's a missed opportunity. But if you're worried like the Rams are with Stafford, I get that. I get that completely. You know, then they have to, you know, they want to make sure that they know there's only so many reps in that body. They don't want to give them away in a preseason.
Well, and so let's go there. So the Rams quarterback room, Matthew Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Stetson Bennett, who struggled mightily in the preseason games that we saw him. Chris Sims, friend of the show, you've had him in the GM shuffle as well. He tweeted, man, there are some scary backup quarterback situations. Yeah. Mentioned the Rams, Cowboys, Lions, Jets, quote, contending teams that could have a whole season blow up with an injury.
How about, you know, how about the Bears? I mean, the Bears. You know, Brett Rypien and Tyson Badgett. I mean, there's some really bad ones. And even the ones that you think are good, once that quarterback goes in there, it could all fall apart. I mean, Houston's got a good room, but there aren't a lot of good rooms. Indianapolis feels like they've got a good room because they've added Flacco. I mean, Cleveland traded Flacco in for Jameis Winston. And as much as you love Winston talking to the team before the game, when the game starts, he's going to throw the ball to the other team. I mean, that's a given.
He'll give you 30 touchdowns, but he'll give you 30 picks, right? That's
Phil Negro. Nobody knows this name. You're too young, but Phil Negro was a knuckleball pitcher for the Braves. He'd win 20, lose 20. Yep. I mean, that's what he did. He could throw every third day because he is a knuckleball. He never used his arm. He'd win you 20, but he's going to lose you 19.
Now, well, there are some quarterback situations that might be, as Chris has put it, scary. There are others that there's some optimism right now. And one of those is certainly in Denver, who you talked about a lot in your article last week on the show. As we go to our NFL preseason all-stars, this list compliments of our wonderful producer, Elliot Bowman. He has Bo Nix leading the way here, Michael. And the odds have indicated as much, too. We went from 18-1 to 11-1 for Offensive Rookie of the Year, led the league in passer rating here in the preseason. 73% completions, 205 pass yards, 2 passing touchdowns. Elliott's also got Mac Jones on here, 73% completions. He had a great preseason in Jacksonville. Jermaine Burton, new wide receiver out there with Cincinnati Bengals, who could make a huge difference on that offense. And Frank Gore Jr. at the running back position for the Bills.
Well, here's what I would say. There's two lists, right? When the veteran quarterbacks play good, you have to dismiss it. Now, for Zach Wilson, it's a good sign. My question would be, and I think Sean Payton's already dangled this out to the media. He said, we're going to keep 3 quarterbacks, meaning if you want to call for Jarrett Stidham, call, okay. Which some teams should do, right? Like the Raiders should have never let Jarrett Stidham leave their building. Because that's why Josh McDaniels isn't working in the league anymore. Because, you know, not signing him and then having to go to Garoppolo just ruined their whole offseason planning. It's one thing to get rid of Derek Carr. It's another thing that you had Stidham play really well. And over $1 million, you don't sign him. I mean, that's really bad. That's how you get fired in the league, when you make that kind of mistake. So, you know, like the Chargers now, they're not going to trade Stidham, but you think the Chargers with Easton Stick are good enough to play?
Oh, Lord, that was brutal to watch, Michael. And I've rooted for Easton Stick in the past. I like his story and where he's come from, but that was tough. To your point about Jarrett Stidham, though, briefly, he did say this past weekend after the final preseason game, he's very disappointed, said, quote, I know I'm a starting quarterback in this league. I have no doubts about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he wants to start. Now, that was his own fault. Had he stayed in the Raiders, he would have been the starter. They wouldn't have signed Garoppolo. They may have signed him but had him compete. But he took the money and went to Denver. And now Denver, I mean, I think Sean believes like he can rehabilitate Zach Wilson. You know, is Trey Lance a backup quarterback? I don't think so. Help. I mean, you sent me that text this weekend. I mean, like, how do you throw an interception on sprint right option? Like, how do you do that? That's a high school play.
Michael, help me with this.
He threw it 5 yards behind the receiver.
He threw 5 interceptions. How are you unpacking Trey Lance at this point and, like, what the Cowboys think that they could have with him? Because I don't understand it.
They know what they have with him. That's the one thing they did. They might not say it to us publicly, but they know what they have with him. They don't have a quarterback. They tried, and give him credit. They gave him all the reps that they needed. They didn't do the Michael Penix program where we're not going to play him. They played him. Now they know. They know he's not good enough. They know they can't cut Cooper Rush. They know he won't be the number 2. Cooper Rush has to be the number 2. You can't run an offense with Lance. The ball's too inconsistently thrown. It's all over the place.
Has to. Last minute here, Michael. Any other players, for better or worse, that stood out to you in the NFL preseason?
Well, I mean, like let's take, for worse, Evan Neal. He finally came off a PUP yesterday or 2 days ago, and the Giants put him in the preseason game against the Jets. He got smoked, and everybody's worried that he got injured. Why are you worried he got injured? If he plays against Minnesota, it's a turnstile. They're never going to be able to play him at right tackle. Like, I was like, okay, I'm waiting for this. You know, remember, Stormy, everything we do this offseason is to protect Daniel Jones.
Oh, yeah.
If they put Evan Neal out there, they're contradicting themselves.
It has been a decade of trying to develop and grow an offensive line in New York, and they have been unable to do it every step of the way. I have no confidence that this year it'll take a step forward either. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Time to hit what's on Michael's mind this Monday, as well as some more big picture takeaways from the preseason. Plus, these wide receivers with contract disputes are where today? We'll be right back.